Hey, we're in Galatians 6 tonight. I'm real excited to be able to preach the word to you guys. If you haven't been with us for a while or it's your first time, we've been in a sermon series in Galatians called No Other Gospel. And we've been just going through the book of Galatians, so this is the second to last week of that. I'm doing the middle section of Galatians 6, and then Andrew will end next week at the very end of Galatians 6. So tonight we're going to be looking verses 7 to 10. And as you're turning there and finding the passage, I want to fill you guys in on a little story, okay? A lot of you guys know Jeremy Dager here at Mercy Hill. He's not here tonight, so I'm going to take a couple of minutes and pick on him. Jeremy has been an elder here at Mercy Hill for probably 6 months now, and about a month ago, he became our age-based ministry pastor. So students, college students, and kids. Jeremy became the pastor of those guys, and so a lot of you may have heard, just kind of being around here, some of us call Jeremy Dirty D. And you may be wondering to yourself, especially if you're new, does Jeremy not shower? Do they not clean their house? You know, what's going on with a nickname like Dirty D? So I figured I would just kind of start off tonight by filling you guys in on why we call him Dirty D. I'm going to give you two examples, okay? About 2 years ago, we were preparing to plant Mercy Hill Church. We were going to, it's kind of like a church planting conference, and we meet at the Summit Church, me, Jeremy, and Andrew, at about 6:30 in the morning, and one of us got probably 12 donuts, okay? Within about 15 minutes of having those 12 donuts, Jeremy ate about 4 of them, okay? It's about 8 o'clock now, and we get to the gas station, and we fill up on gas, and Jeremy comes out of the gas station with this huge smile on his face, and he has a ice cream Snickers bar and a bag of spicy Doritos that he walks out of the gas station with at 8 o'clock in the morning. This... not one part of this story is exaggeration, okay? He eats both of those within about 30 minutes. He's drinking coffee. He might even have had a Mountain Dew. And we get to the place where we are going, and they had these massive cinnamon buns. And Jeremy eats 2 or 3 of these cinnamon buns at this place. And then by the time we get done with this, it's probably 11 o'clock, and we go to this restaurant, and Jeremy just kills some Chinese food. All within a matter of about 4 or 5 hours. And then, no lie, the next 24 hours, I was talking to Jeremy, and he said, "Hey, man, very strange. I don't know why, but I often get indigestion." And I said, "That's interesting. Okay, weird. You know, why would you get indigestion?" About 6 months later, we're in Florida doing some other church planting stuff, trying to get some partner churches for Mercy Hill. And we're staying at Andrew's parents' house in Jacksonville around Christmas time, and their family always goes to this huge Christmas party way out in the woods, really awesome party, and they basically have a chili bar with a bunch of different bowls of chili. And so we're there, and Jeremy Dirty D is being himself, and he eats, no lie, at least 8 bowls of chili that night. And all of them have either Doritos or Fritos on top of it. We get back to Andrew's house that night, and obviously Jeremy can't sleep, and so we talk to him the next morning. He's like, "Man, I was up all night. My stomach was hurting." He said, "It's weird because I just don't know why this always happens to me." He was dead serious. He's like, "I don't know if it's genetic." And finally, I had to tell Jeremy, "Bro, you reap what you sow. If you eat spicy Doritos, you're going to reap indigestion. If you eat 8 bowls of chili, you are going to reap a stomach ache." That's the world we live in, okay? We all understand that concept, right, of reaping what you sow. Paul uses this exact language tonight in Galatians 6. And he uses it to basically apply to our spiritual lives and to apply to the concept of spiritual growth. And so we're just going to jump right in to verse 7. He says, Paul says this, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever one sows, that will he also reap." Let me say two quick things there before we get into our first point, okay? Very important to realize here that Paul, he's talking about post-salvation. He's talking about after we become a Christian, this is a principle that's working in our lives, okay? You don't reap what you sow in terms of your salvation. You get exactly opposite of what you sow. You don't deserve salvation, and that's what the whole book of Galatians is about. And you are saved by grace through faith and nothing else, not based on any work that you do. But here, he's going, and now he's talking about our spiritual growth. He's not talking about how we become a Christian. So don't get confused here when you see that you reap what you sow, as if we can reap, you know, our salvation by sowing good works or whatever. That's not at all what he's talking about. it kind of fits in the quote here from Martin Luther. Salvation comes through faith alone, but faith is never alone. And that's what we're going to see here tonight. There are faith-inspired works that come out of our salvation. And so the first point tonight, what we're going to probably focus on 80% of the time is this. You grow what you sow. You grow what you sow in terms of your spiritual growth after becoming a Christian. He's using a basic farming analogy that even if we don't farm, I think we can all understand what he's getting at here. Andrew said this a couple weeks ago. Whatever you plant in the ground, that's what you harvest. Whatever you plant in the ground, that's what you harvest. So if you think about it, if you plant corn, you grow corn. You plant wheat, you grow wheat. North Carolina is a tobacco state, right? If you plant tobacco, you grow tobacco. You know, just as a little side note, the interns this week at Mercy Hill taught me that in North Carolina, there's at least 4 to 6 ways to say the word tobacco. Okay, just for you guys' curiosity. Tobacco, kind of normal, non-redneck, right? Semi-redneck, tobacco, you throw an A on the end. You want to get real redneck, you say debacca, you throw a D on the front of it. And if you just want to get country, you say backer, okay? You throw a B on the front of it. 4 different ways to say tobacco. This principle is kind of, it's woven into our world about reaping and sowing. Just some real basic ways we understand this. A lot of you have probably seen that beef jerky commercial with Sasquatch, right? If you mess with Sasquatch, he's probably going to eat you. You reap what you sow, okay? If you play on LeBron James's basketball team, you probably will win an NBA championship. That's for all of you LeBron haters out there, okay? If you break up with Taylor Swift, she will write a song about you. That's just the way the world works. Even though it's a basic law we can all understand, if you look there at the verse, Paul says, do not be deceived. Don't be deceived about this. And the reason he says this is because there's often a great time gap between reaping and sowing. You know, we could sow something in our spiritual lives and not reap it for 5, 10, 15, or 20 years. And so it's actually very easy to be deceived about this concept. I'll tell you a quick story. I read this study that they did at Stanford University in the 1970s. Some of you may have heard about this study. They were basically testing temptation on toddlers. And they put toddlers in this room, and they said, okay, we have a deal for you. You can have one marshmallow right now, or you can wait 15 minutes, and you can have 2 marshmallows. Okay, before I tell the rest of the story, let's be real honest here. Who would have just went for the one marshmallow? My wife definitely would have went for the one marshmallow, and then she would have begged for the second marshmallow. Okay, so they did this study, and most of the kids went for the one marshmallow. Some of them were able to restrain themselves by singing, covering up the marshmallows, closing their eyes, standing in the corner, looking away from it. And if they waited only 15 minutes, they got the 2 marshmallows. Now, they came back a number of years later, 10 or 15 years later, and they went and said, what are these kids doing now? And not really surprising, but the kids who were able to withhold the 15 minutes for the 2 marshmallows were generally more successful in life. And I think this concept is kind of true. They began to sow something when they were little kids that they began to reap later on in high school and in college. And this is what Paul is saying here, but he's applying it to our spiritual lives, that we reap what we sow. You see, a lot of us, honestly, we think we're the exception for this. We think we're the exception. We have this one specific sin in our lives, and sexual immorality, whatever it may be. And we do this sin, and the next morning we wake up and nothing has changed. We haven't had any harvest from this particular sin. Our lives really haven't changed. Our relationships haven't changed. It doesn't feel like our relationship with God has changed. And so we begin to be deceived, thinking that maybe this principle doesn't apply to me. And as you look down at verse 7, what we begin to do, we begin to mock God. If you live like this doesn't apply to you, you begin to mock God, like this isn't a spiritual law of nature. Paul goes on to give us 2 examples, and that's where we're going to kind of hone in tonight, how this plays out in our spiritual lives. And the first one is this. Take a note, write this one down. If you sow sin, you will reap corruption. This comes right from verse 8. If you sow sin,
you will reap corruption. Paul says, for the one who sows to his own flesh, from the flesh will reap corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. Flesh and spirit, quick definition. Flesh is what we are all born with. It's a sinful nature that desires to do things that are against God. We deal with it our entire lives. We know what we're supposed to do, like Paul says in Romans, but we don't do it. We choose to do something else. We choose to follow our flesh. When we become a Christian, God regenerates us, does a supernatural work in our life, gives us his Holy Spirit, and we begin to have dispositions for God's Spirit. And so there's this battle going on inside, which one we're going to sow to. Are we going to sow to the sinful nature, or are we going to sow to the Spirit? And the old saying or adage I think here is very true, and I think they might have it up on the screen there. Sow a thought, reap an act. Sow an act, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny. And we're going to see that tonight, that there are two different destinies depending on what we're going to sow, either in terms of our sin or sow to please the Spirit. The picture here is like you're carrying around two buckets in each hand. In one bucket, you have seeds that are sowing to please the Spirit, that come from fruits of the Spirit. In the other one, you have seeds that are sowing to please the flesh. And in everything you do, you're choosing what to sow. So what you say, what you think about, who you hang around with, what you do with your time, what you dream about, everything is sowing. There's nothing that's not sowing in your life. And Paul says if we sow to please the flesh or the sinful nature, he says we're going to reap corruption. This word corruption, what it's getting at here in the Greek, it's getting at this idea of a decaying body, actually. It's a very graphic term. Basically, if you sow to please the sinful nature, it's as if you're going to be living, but you're going to be dying. You're going to be decaying. You're doing the opposite of what brings you life. Our family, we have a mountain house out in Franklin, Western North Carolina. I remember I was there 3 or 4 months ago, and we're driving through Franklin. And some of you have probably seen these billboards. There was a massive billboard. And on the left side of the billboard, there was a picture of this lady. She was probably 30 years old, just looked pretty normal. On the right side of the billboard was her after doing meth for 2 or 3 years. And she was alive, but it looked like she was almost dead. Like she had literally begun to decay. She clearly had lost her teeth. Her eyes were sinking in. And they were showing you this is what this leads to. This leads to decay. This leads seriously to death. It's going to be a slow death. And that's what Paul is getting at here. If we sow to please our flesh, our sinful nature, it's going to literally decay us. It's going to lead us straight to death. So what are some of the things that we could sow to please the flesh? If you remember back about 3 weeks ago from Galatians 5, Paul goes over the fruits of the Spirit and the fruits of the flesh. And some of the fruits of the flesh are things like sexual immorality, idolatry, strife, jealousy, anger, divisions, envy, drunkenness. And the problem is, like I said earlier, a lot of times there's a huge time gap between sowing and reaping. And so let's go through some of these fruits and think about it. Maybe some of the things we may be doing in our life, some of the things we may be sowing, and we think we're not going to reap a harvest from them. Think about one of them that Paul mentions in terms of fruits of the flesh, sexual immorality. I'll just talk to you girls for 1 second. Some of you might be in a dating relationship right now, and your boyfriend, whoever you're with, they're constantly pushing you towards, you know, being sexually immoral. And you think in your mind, no big deal, you know, we're going to get engaged pretty soon, then we're going to get married. And then once you're married, he ends up running around on you. And you say, why in the world did he do this? I would say, it's not surprising at all. This is the harvest from what he has been sowing for all of these years. That's how this works. There is a harvest to sowing. Some of you guys, maybe you struggle looking at pornography. Maybe more than struggle, maybe you choose to do it day after day after day. And you say, there's not going to be a harvest from this. This isn't going to affect my marriage. This isn't going to affect my ability to have intimacy. But the reality is, yes, it will. There will be a harvest in your life. That's what Paul's talking about here. How about just general strife in marriage? You know, I've been married 7-something years, and I've dealt with this a good bit. You know, some of you over and over and over are angry to your spouse day after day after day after day. And then 2 years go by, 5 years go by, 10 years go by, and your marriage, it's barely hanging on. And you're like, why? What happened to my marriage? But it's like, this is what you have been sowing for the last 2 years, for the last 5 years, for the last 10 years. And you begin to have a harvest from what you've been sowing. How about some of you with kids? You know, you're constantly showing maybe anger to your kids or in front of your kids, you know, year after year. And then you go to something like a parent-teacher conference, and the teacher says, you know, your son or daughter, they're always exhibiting anger around other kids. That's not surprising. That's what you've been sowing in your family for all these years. And that's the harvest that will come from it. Just a couple more. How about biblical community? Some of us choose, you know what? I'm just going to come to church kind of whenever I want. You know what I mean? I'm going to come every couple weeks. Got a lot of other stuff going on. I'm going to kind of go to community group whenever I want. You know, you're not going off and worshiping at some pagan temple or whatever, but you got vacations, you got things to do, and you begin to sow individualism instead of sowing biblical community. And then something just goes terribly wrong in your life, and no one is around you when that happens, and you wonder why, but that's the harvest from what you've been sowing. You've been sowing individualism. That's what you're going to reap when something bad happens. How about just a simple growing relationship with Jesus? You know, maybe when you first became a Christian, that relationship with Jesus was just so great and you were so close, but then you got busy and you said, I'm not going to read my Bible. I'm not going to pray. You began to sow these things that you don't need Christ. And then before you know it, you're living as an atheist, although you're going to church and whatnot, because your relationship with Jesus is nothing, because that's what you've been sowing all that time. And so the thing is, we have to realize that, man, sowing to please the flesh, it's going to affect our vertical relationship with God. And it's going to affect our horizontal relationship with one another, because that's the harvest that comes from that. Now, just as an aside real quick, it's not surprising at all that Mercy Hill is a pretty young church. We're not a college church, but, you know, during the school year, we probably have 50 college students. We have a ton of young professionals here at Mercy Hill. The thing about it, some of these categories maybe didn't apply to you. You're like, I'm not married. Maybe I'm not even dating. I don't have kids. But if this principle is true, what Paul is talking about sowing and reaping, a lot of you that are younger, you are in a sowing period of your life. That's just the reality. And whatever you sow right now, 5, 10, 15, 20, 40 years from now, there's going to be a harvest in your life. And so you better really take this sort of stuff in. You know, because a lot of times you think, if I'm young, it doesn't matter how I live now, you know, and I'll get on track 5 or 10 years from now. You're going to be 10 years from now, whatever you're sowing to be. That's the spiritual reality of this. So those are the negatives. That's sowing to please the flesh. Now here's the positives, the happier stuff. Paul says, if you sow to please the Spirit, you will reap life. If you sow to please the Spirit, you will literally reap life. And this is the second half of verse 8. But the one who sows to please the Spirit, from the Spirit will reap eternal life. Philip Ryken, an author, he says this, sowing to the Spirit means sowing the kind of seed that comes from the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, kindness, faithfulness, and the like. It means cultivating good spiritual fruit by using the means of grace, Bible study, prayer, worship, and the sacraments. For a lot of us, we don't necessarily have a sowing problem. You know you should be sowing to please the Spirit. You know you should be loving instead of hateful. You know you should be generous instead of selfish. But we do have a problem with patience. We simply live in a culture that says, if I do something for a week or a month and it doesn't work, I'm just simply going to give up on it. And that's where some of us may be in our spiritual lives, because that's what our culture is saying. Just think of some kind of funny examples. Think of Hollywood marriages, how long they last, or just Hollywood relationships. I mean, there's like a 45% chance that Kim and Kanye will be broken up by the end of the sermon. And if you don't know who they are, be very thankful, okay? For those of you who watch the NBA Finals, Game 6 in Miami. After the third quarter, Miami's losing. They're about to lose the series. A good majority of their fans leave. They leave the stadium. They're standing outside of the stadium, flicking the stadium off. Well, Miami comes back and ties it in the fourth quarter. They're then banging on the door to get back in the stadium. They won't let them back in the stadium. That's just the world we live in. We say, I'm going to try something out. If it doesn't work, or if it doesn't seem like it's working, I'm just going to give up on it. And so some of us have possibly done this in our spiritual lives. We've begun to sow. We don't see a harvest. We don't see results. We're just saying, I'm going to give up on this. It was better. It was funner going in just sinning and sowing to please the flesh. But you see, the way sowing to please the Spirit works, it's a lot of sowing and it's a lot of time. And that's what leads to spiritual growth in our life, a lot of sowing and a lot of time. You see, when we become a Christian, there's a disconnect in terms of our righteousness and the way God sees us and the way we actually are. You see, when you're a Christian, in terms of your salvation, God is always going to see you as being righteous through Jesus, always. No matter what you do, right or wrong, God is always going to accept you in Jesus. You have Jesus' literal righteousness. But the problem is, we all have experienced this. God declares us to be righteous, but we know when we wake up tomorrow, we're going to struggle with being unrighteous. And so our spiritual growth is basically becoming in practice what Jesus has already declared us to be. He's declared us to be righteous, and now we begin to become in practice that righteousness. And we do that by sowing the right things over and over and over, day in and day out, sowing to please the Spirit, doing what is right. And that ends up developing this practical, spiritual, day-to-day righteousness in us. Andrew's made fun of me a number of times before, but I'm kind of obsessed with plane crashes, and it makes me feel better because I found out Robert Kuntz is also obsessed with plane crashes. I pretty much read about every major plane crash in the United States, and a very kind of heartwarming story a lot of you have heard of was the story of Sully Sullenberger landing the flight in the Hudson River in New York City. How many of you guys remember that story? I don't know, it happened maybe 3 years ago or something. Basically what happens, they take off out of New York City, and they're actually going to Charlotte, North Carolina, and they get about 3,000 feet over the city, and they hit a major flock of Canadian geese. And pretty much, in my experience, the only sound you don't want to hear on an airplane is no sound, because that means the engines aren't working. They hit this flock of Canadian geese, and the engines go totally out. And the air traffic controllers are saying, all right, obviously, you need to get back to the airport and make a crash, or not make a crash, and just make a landing. And they realize, like, there's no way we're going to get back to the airport. So him, having 30 years of experience, he goes through all these different steps. I'm going to read them off to you very fast to see what he did in a matter of about 2 minutes, okay? They had to shut down the engines. They had to get to the right speed because he's about to glide with no power. They had to put the nose of the plane down to maintain speed, which seems kind of against what you should do when you have no engines. You would think you'd want to pull it up. They had to disconnect the autopilot and override the flight management system. They had to basically close all the vents on the plane to keep it from sinking when it hit the water. They had to make a massive left turn, and then they had to land a certain way in the Hudson so they'd be going downstream so the thing wouldn't sink, and on and on and on and on. There are all these steps he had to do in a matter of about 2 minutes. And what do you think would have happened if he was a first-year pilot? He would have crashed that thing into the city. There's no doubt about it, because he would have known all the steps, but he just wasn't a very good pilot if he was a first-year pilot. You know, he knew go through this, go through this, go through this. But Sully Sullenberger, he naturally did this after flying for 30 years. And he's quoted as saying, I think in many ways, as it turned out, my entire life up to that moment had been a preparation to handle that particular moment. He was able just to respond because he had developed these certain type of virtues in his life. He was an expert pilot. He didn't have to go through the steps. He just responded to a situation. And this is what Paul is saying. Through time and practice, we become these types of people with the Spirit working in our lives, constantly sowing over and over and over to please the Spirit of God. Now, there's a big difference between sowing and just dabbling in something. You see, a lot of us will dabble in spiritual things. We'll dabble in community. We'll dabble in reading our Bibles. But he's saying, no, you have to sow these things day in and day out for your entire life. And the harvest that will come in your life is eternal life. That's what Paul's talking about. So what are some of the practical fruits of the Spirit that we all need to sow? And I can give you a list. I'm gonna. But you have to think in your own life, what are the fruits of the Spirit that you need to sow? How about being generous? You know, we need to respond to what Jesus has done in our life. And instead of sowing selfishness, we need to begin to sow generosity. How about sowing love in marriage? Sometimes your spouse is going to make you extremely angry. And you're going to want to sow anger or hatred. How about sowing love instead? How about joy? You know, some of you, you're going to want to wake up tomorrow because whatever life situation you're in, you're going to want to wake up and be depressed. But how about because of what Jesus has done for you? How about sowing joy instead? Say, no, I'm going to be joyful because of what Christ has done for me. How about sowing seeds of sharing the gospel to your coworkers instead of just holding that in when you're at work? How about sowing peace in relationships? If you're in any relationships, there's going to be conflict because we're all sinful people. You know, are you the first one to ask for forgiveness? Are you the first one to forgive? Are you the first one to say you're sorry? Are you sowing peace in your relationships? How about patience? You know, as you drive, as you're at Walmart, which is almost impossible. Just general patience with wherever you're at in life. How about sowing biblical community? Do you go to church and community group as if your spiritual life depends on it? Because Paul is saying your spiritual life does depend on these things. How about simply just reading your Bible and praying, sowing that relationship with Christ in response to what he's done for you? And so that's the big question. Are you sowing to please the flesh, or are you sowing to please the Spirit? Because each one leads to a different direction. I've been encouraged by, I'll just single out one person here tonight, Nate Smith. Some of you know Nate. He's in my community group. And just like all of us, Nate's not perfect. Just like all of us, Nate continues to struggle with sin in his life. But I remember 3 or 4 months after Nate became a Christian here at Mercy Hill and was baptized, I was just talking with him. And at the time, he was delivering pizzas. And he's like, man, since I've become a Christian, I've probably listened to 300 sermons while driving around delivering pizzas. And I was encouraged by that because you know what Nate's been doing? He's been sowing and sowing and sowing and sowing. And I've already gotten to see the harvest in his life. There's already been a massive change in his life because what he's been sowing. And so for all of us, what are you sowing? You know, are you sowing to please the Spirit? Or are you sowing to please the flesh? The second and last point, really a concluding point for Paul, is this. Do not become weary in doing good. Do not become weary in doing good. Look at verse 9 and 10. Paul says, let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we'll reap if we do not give up. So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially those who are of the household of faith. You see, Paul knows that it's very easy to become weary, right? We sow and we sow and we sow, and there's absolutely no harvest in our life. A lot of you may be there tonight. You've grown very weary in doing good because this is a lifetime thing. You know, this is not a weekly or a monthly thing. And so Paul says, do not grow weary because we will reap a harvest. You know, some of you at work, maybe you've grown weary. You've tried to honor God. You've tried to be honest at work. You've tried to be a good employee. You know, and the people that cut corners, maybe the people that are dishonest, they're the ones that seem to be getting ahead. And you say, there's no harvest here. Maybe with your kids, you're sharing Jesus with your kids over and over and over and over. And it just seems like there's no fruit from that. And so you just want to give up on that. Maybe sharing your faith. You know, maybe there are people, and I've talked with some in the last couple of weeks, that have shared Christ with a family member or a friend over and over and over and over. And you see no fruit from that. And so you say, I'm just pretty much ready to give up on this, you know? Or how about money? You know, you try to do right with your money, you try to be generous, and you still struggle every day financially. And you struggle to be able to pay your bills. And you say, I've been sowing, I've been doing what's right, I don't see a harvest yet. You know, some of you guys, like myself, you are weary from planting Mercy Hill Church. I don't know if all you guys know this, but there's a big group of people that get here at 2:30 every single week and are here till 7:30 or 8 every single week. And some of you, even myself, have grown weary from doing that over and over and over and over. But Paul says, if any of you fall into that category, in due season we will reap if we do not give up. That's the important part, if we do not give up. You see, because if you go back to the farming analogy, when the farmer stops sowing, there will be no harvest. It doesn't matter. If he stops sowing, if he stops throwing out the seed, there's not going to be a harvest. But Paul says, in due season, we will reap. And this means in God's timing, we will reap. Just continue to sow because there will be a harvest in our lives, in this life or in the next life. And I'll just give you two quick examples. There was somebody that sowed seeds of the gospel in my life from the time I was probably 15 years old till I was 21 or 22 years old with no results. They sowed, they sowed, they sowed, and they saw no results. And then there ultimately ended up being a harvest in my life. You know, my eyes were open to the gospel. But this guy had just sowed over and over and over and over without growing weary, without giving up. I read of a story this week that's just such an interesting story. It's between a guy named Luke Short and this guy named John Flavel. Any of you follow church history, this guy John Flavel was a famous preacher when the United States was being colonized. And this guy, Luke Short, he was living in the colony of Virginia at the time, and he's 103 years old and ends up becoming a Christian based on a sermon he remembered from Flavel. He realized his sin. You know, he repented, accepted Christ, and became a Christian. On his tombstone, it said, "Here lies a babe in grace, aged 3 years, who died according to nature, aged 106. But the crazy thing about the story, Flavel had preached this sermon 85 years prior to this in England. And Short was there and listened to this sermon. And 85 years later, Flavel and Short both got to see a harvest from the seed that Flavel had sown. And so there will be a harvest. You know, that's the encouragement for us to be patient, to continue to sow. One commentator says it like this: there's a reminder not to evaluate ministry on the basis of immediate results. Too many churches, especially in America, want to taste the fruits of their labors the day they are planted, yet most spiritual produce takes time to grow. It takes time in our lives, and it takes time in people around us, their lives too. And so we must not grow weary and continue to sow to please the Spirit and not the flesh. And so as we conclude, how do we not give up? How do we persevere in doing good? I'm going to just share with you guys as we end here Hebrews 12, just as an encouragement. Because really the only way that Hebrews tells us that we don't grow weary is to look to Jesus. That's the only way we don't grow weary and sowing to please the Spirit. I'm going to read it. It says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself." And then look at this last phrase: "so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted." He says, don't look at your circumstances. Don't try to look at the immediate results. Look to Jesus. Some of the translations say, fix your eyes upon Jesus. It says he is the founder of our faith, meaning our salvation. He is the perfecter of our faith. He's the one that can bring you to the end. He's the one that can complete the spiritual growth in your life. And they say, consider him that you may not grow weary. Some of you are so weary, you're like, I just want to continue to go back and start to live the way I used to live. Because I haven't seen a harvest in my life. I haven't seen any results. But if you would fix your eyes on Jesus, you won't grow weary. And this is the reality that should inspire all of us tonight, is that because of Christ, we don't ultimately reap what we have sown. Because of Christ, we don't ultimately reap what we have sown in terms of our salvation. If we were to reap what we have sown, every one of us would be separated from God and from Christ. Because we have sown sin, we have sown hatred towards God, we constantly sow to please the flesh. And all of those things separate us from God. But because of Christ, we have a chance to reap what he has sown. He chose to live for righteousness, obedience to God, denying the flesh, sowing to please the Spirit. And God, through faith, he's willing to apply all of that to us. You know, some of you may be sitting in here tonight and you're kind of depressed, honestly, because you hear about sowing to please the flesh and sowing to please the Spirit. And you say, I've been doing a lot of sowing to please the flesh. And if I'm going to reap what I have sown, my harvest is going to be separation from God and sin. But you have a chance tonight to sow something different based on what Jesus has done. And so for all of us, that's our only hope. That's the only thing that can inspire us. That's our only answer for this tonight. Only through Christ can we ultimately sow to please the Spirit. Let me pray for us.